we have the Rensha Suit All Palettes available in 500 grams and 1 kg punnets. Limited stock, especially for Ramadan. Simply WhatsApp 084-777-0786. Place your order for collection or home delivery. All home deliveries to our customers age 60 years and older is absolutely free. Find us at the entrance to the Boulevard Office Park, Woodstock.
The Voice of the Cape. 91.3 FM stereo.
In conversation with Shafiq Morden.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to In Conversation With. But before we go to our weekly economic report, some breaking news is that Chad's longtime president, Idriss Deby, has died of wounds suffered on the front line in the country's north, where he had gone to visit soldiers battling rebels, the armed forces have said. So, yes, indeed, we'll be following that story very close. Deby, 68, has just breathed his last defending the sovereign nation on the battlefield, said a general from the country of Chad. Chad, by the way, one of the poorest countries in Africa. But in this week's weekly World Economic Report, we can look at the following. U.S. senators call on President Biden to back India and South Africa on COVID vaccine patent waivers. The Reserve Bank says Tokyo Sexwale's claims of donor fund theft is crazy. And SARS is to improve tax collection. Online for comment is convener at the Africa Policy Circle, Dr. Paul Kariuki. Dr. Kariuki, as always, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
The big one, U.S. senators, at least some, calling on Biden to back India and South Africa on COVID vaccine patent waivers. This is a big one. How likely do you think this is? I don't think it's very likely.
Indeed, you're correct. It's going to take some time for countries to move to that direction and also for Biden to win with that argument because the vaccine story has taken more than a year in terms of global structuring. For manufacturing, and you can imagine big countries like your China and India, they have already gone too far, and UK for this matter, and I'm sure Russia might be working on something also that they would like to have, you know, their own preeminence. So it might take a while for all the big players to come to the table and agree that that's the way to go, at least even if it's in the short term. It will take a lot of convincing and dialogues, and of course each one checking the other one out to see if there is any hidden agenda that may not have been explicit, made explicit to this advantage. And therefore, it's not going to happen so likely very soon as it may appear on the various media platforms.
But of course, I think there is going to be a battle. I foresee some NGOs and NPOs taking up the cudgels because I'm sure you'll agree, they should, because why should citizens in poor countries like India and Africa have to pay so much, or why should the governments have to pay so much for the right to live?
And that's the other thing that is very important around this conversation on vaccination, is actually trying to curtail what has lately been known as vaccination nationalism, where countries that are able to buy vaccine in large doses are kind of, you know, over dominating the market space, and therefore all other low and medium middle income countries are really struggling to get to buy doses for their populations. Therefore, on one hand, the proponents of this argument are really making a good case to say, if waivers are done, it's going to allow countries to start manufacturing their own vaccines, at least even if it's generic, locally, to at least safeguard the lives of many of their populations that are now at risk. Of course, the proponents will not want that argument because they, you know, they would like to control who gets the access to the market, And of course, they like to control who also does pay and does pay for what price. The issue here is a cost price. And majority of these low and middle income countries are really, really battling to get access to buying sufficient vaccines for their own countries. And even a country like South Africa, you know, there's a pressure to secure sufficient doses for everyone at a go. So you can imagine what happens to other countries that are a little bit unable to even get to the negotiating table.
No, absolutely. And of course, I mean, the issue, as you've so correctly said here, is that some countries, and I've been told that Canada is the worst example. Canada's got 10 doses for every citizen. United Kingdom's got 6 doses for every citizen. I don't know who they're going to vaccinate once they've finished vaccinating the citizens with such excess stock that they've got.
And that's precisely the point. And so it just does not make any sense to anybody outside of those countries, because the sense of humanity in such a public health emergency has been totally been lost. It's now purely about selfishness and profits before people. And countries like Canada and those who have smaller populations would want to see that their populations are well protected against a majority of billions of people. And so at this point in time, you'd expect, you know, the sense of saying that's a shared solidarity in trying to protect transmission and deaths of people. Countries that are behaving exact opposite is just one of those things that you wonder at what point do nations around the world share in what we would see as a collective humanity. And of course, it raises questions of morality also on the part of such countries.
It really does, because there are going to be some countries in the world that are not going to be able to afford to vaccinate, and yet people in the wealthy countries are going to want to travel. And the irony is, it's some of the places that they like to travel to are some of the very places that are struggling to pay to afford for vaccines. I'm thinking of Tanzania with its game parks. As we know, Tanzania's had problems. Kenya, etc., etc. These are countries that European tourists love to go to, put on a khaki uniform and pretend they're a hunter or something. But on a more serious note, then they're not going to be able to go to these countries because no vaccines.
Yes. And of course, then it will mean then either they forego their, you know, tourism pleasures, or they expose themselves to the same risk that they're trying to avoid, or just stay at home, point blank. But of which I'm sure probably they might go with the former possibility of trying not to travel at all, because you know what? Once it's exposed to this virus and they are not do not have any you know, capacity to fight it off, it does not choose the color, the country, the wealthy and the poor and the status. It doesn't. Once you're exposed and there's now immediate attention, then the nations bid you by. And so they're not safe either unless they stay in their own country and not to travel.
Yeah, and they will also not be able to get herd immunities or get rid of COVID. So their own selfishness, in a sense, is going to see themselves shooting themselves in their feet.
It is true. And if there was any sense of shared humanity, in fact, what they could be doing is to donate their own jobs that they have in excess to those countries that are battling even to get the most minimum to inoculate their own populations. And so it's ironical because some of these countries that are wealthy and trying to buy as much as they can for their own populations in excess, and the same countries that come to these low and middle income countries for development action or for development projects. So how do you come to provide roads and other forms of development or infrastructure, but you're not well concerned about the health of the same populations? It's ironical.
It
a lot of hypocrisy when it goes to these things.
It is. Let's turn to something. I don't know what the Rand Water Board have put into Mr. Toko Sixwali's water. I'm still trying to understand what on earth he was going on about. I picked up there was a conspiracy. I picked up that Jacob Zuma and Ramaphosa should have spent some money. A famous family was involved. But where is the money? I'm sure you're asking similar questions.
It is true, and of course, on one hand, one wonders how would a person of this national stature be scammed, to get to a situation where he would believe a lie. If this is a lie, as allegedly from what the National Treasury and South African, Reserve Bank have in their statement, they claim there is nothing like this that Tokyo is trying to suggest. And so it either one of two things. Either he was truly, as a Minister of Finance has said, a victim of a scam, a serious scam, or it could be a political ploy to distract attention of the nation from the big things that are happening right now in our country politically that has gotten us talking as a nation. And so only time can tell where this will go. But at least the National Treasury and the Reserve Bank have actually asked Mr. Toko if he has any verifiable evidence, then he should bring it forward for them to investigate and check. And of course, now that it has become a public conversation, of course, we are all wanting to know, is this true? And if it is true, then is the money? If it isn't true, then maybe Mr. Toko has something to tell the nation.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of an RET kind of a thing. Except this time it's not Pep Store Carl Neuhaus, except it's somebody else.
Yes, and of course the burden of proof now is on Mr. Toko to really rise up to the challenge that the National Treasury and South African Reserve Bank has actually put to him, so that this matter can be laid to rest. Otherwise, it will of course paint him the wrong picture right now for trying to get into the factional battles that are currently going on between, in the ANC, and could be playing out this firstly to discredit the sixth administration in some way, and of course getting in between the, as we know, the president will be going to the Zondo Commission in a week's time. Of course, he's trying to muddy his path so that, already the public probably start making their own conclusions based on what he has produced forward as a possible money that has been kept away that was meant to finance free education. And you can see how this is going to play out. When students at the moment are busy striking left, right, and center to access higher education, and then something like this is dropped in the middle of all these challenges where the higher education sector is trying to find out ways to make this academic year possible, you can imagine the scale of anger now that will start seething among the public and among students and at the university unless this matter is laid to rest.
Yes, indeed. It certainly, I think, is going to play itself out in an interesting way. Our final topic, SARS to improve tax collection over the next 3 years. Tom Moyani would disagree. He felt he'd really improve tax collection by not collecting tax, but that's another story. That certainly is good news. And I do believe, by the way, Dr. Kariuki, that SARS has already over-collected this year.
Well, to be honest, on one part, one would really want to commend SARS for the work they have done as a tax collector. Given the circumstances that the nation has found itself in the middle of a global pandemic that kind of stalled economic growth, wiped away people's livelihoods, businesses were wiped away, and they're just beginning to regain their their foot in the market, so to speak. So having collected, you know, significant amounts of money, you know, over 38 billion rand, that is really commendable. And it's one of those, you know, prestatos of government that you can see there is work happening there that is actually kind of trying to inspire people, you know, to continue building the nation and, of course, at the same time also be faithful to pay their taxes. And so I think in many ways, the picture that SARS has produced for us as a nation is a compelling picture. It goes against the many negatives that have really kind of, you know, littered our public opinion space and kind of make many people feel, you know, depressed every time you listen to news or something like that. So at least even though... paying tax is not easy for so many people. They would love to hear there is more money, but they are not paying for it. But
yeah,
in this case, they are paying for it, but at least it's there. Then now the next logical question is, how is this money going to be put into good use to improve the welfare of citizens?
Indeed. Unfortunately, we have to leave it on that note. Dr. Paul Kariuki, convener at the Africa Policy Circle for Weekly Economic Report. Dr. Kariuki, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Shafiq. Have a good afternoon.
In conversation with Shafiq Morden.